plunderers attend a funeral in Nablus for three Palestinians killed by Israeli regime nearly 2 months ago. People protest in New York to condemn a chokehold killing of an African-American man by a white former Marine. The World Health Organization says that COVID-19 is no longer a global health emergency after the pandemic left millions of people dead. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. In our top story, hundreds of Palestinians take part in a funeral for three young men who were killed by Israeli forces nearly 2 months ago. Israeli forces shot dead the three Palestinians in the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank back on March 12th, but the regime refused to release their bodies to their families. Israeli military frequently withholds bodies of resistance group members to pressure their relatives. The regime has also stepped up attacks across occupied territories in recent months. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Tehran says the U.S. is responsible for all past and future acts of terrorism by Israel against Iran's nuclear scientists and nuclear facilities. In a tweet, Secretary of Iran's National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, says U.S. should accept the consequences of its support for Israel. This comes after the White House National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, said the U.S. will recognize Israel's freedom of action if Iran tries to obtain nuclear weapons. Washington and its Western allies frequently warn about Tehran moving toward a capacity to produce nuclear weapons. Iran has repeatedly dismissed the allegation, citing a strict monitoring of its nuclear activities by the UN nuclear watchdog. Another protest is held in the U.S. over the death of a black man, Jordan Neely, who was killed by a white former Marine in New York. The protesters chanted justice for Jordan as they gathered outside the Manhattan District Attorney's office on Friday. They called Neely's death an act of lynching, likening it to the murder of George Floyd by white officers in 2020. Neely, a mentally ill homeless man, died on Monday. A video circulating online shows a former Marine holding him in a chokehold before he faints and later succumbs at a hospital. A New York medical examiner has called his death a homicide. However, the Manhattan District Attorney has refrained so far from announcing any charges against the Marine involved in his death. And now joining us for our news review program is Colin Campbell, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Gerald Horn, professor of African American Studies, joining us out of the University of Houston in Texas. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Colin, we're going to start with you. Colin, there are reports that this gentleman was belligerent and a little bit erratic, but we both know that this doesn't justify what happened to him. What do you know about the story?
Well, right now, one of the most important things to note is that the man who allegedly killed Jordan Neely has not been charged. He was released by police, and that's why protesters are so upset, and that's why many people are so aggravated at what happened to Jordan Neely. Now, of course, people say that there are lots of people on the subway. Every once in a while, you get people who might seem that they aren't totally cognizant of what's going on. They may be belligerent. They may be annoying. They may be pestering. But one thing that I think goes beyond the limit is a type of vigilantism. And that's what it seems like this Marine, U.S. Marine, 24-year-old U.S. Marine who has not been identified, has engaged in a type of vigilantism. And it's also very troubling that as this Marine put Neely in a chokehold, two other people were holding down Neely's arms. So essentially, it was like a lynching. It was like just murdering someone on the subway, right? And I think that's what's most troubling about this, is that no one's been charged in it. We do know that Neely was known to be a Michael Jackson impersonator, someone who other people have described as homeless. So he was already facing adverse situations. This is not a person who was just having a bad day and decided to take it out on subway passengers. This is someone who has been dealing with lots of difficulties along the way, and, you know, it did deserve to be treated with some kind of respect. But what we're seeing here is somebody who was on the subway, apparently enraged another passenger, and that passenger put him in a chokehold, and he later, Neely later died. We also know, we have to remember, these chokeholds have a precedent of leading to death, when we know about Eric Garner, who was killed by a police chokehold several years ago, and many more cases, but probably the most notable one is when Eric Garner was killed by police using a chokehold. And now we see another young black man being killed by a type of vigilantism, which we have seen with the Ahmaud Arbery case, which we've seen with the Trayvon Martin case, with Zimmerman in Florida. So this is something that continues to occur, and I think that people are just frustrated over this. They're tired of it, and they want to see some justice.
Thank you, Colin. And Professor Horn, welcome to the program, sir. Now, Professor Horn, I'm sure we've all seen people out in public that suffer from mental issues. I have on a street corner, or, you know, up and down a sidewalk when their schizophrenia or one of their issues kicks in and gets hold of them for a few minutes. Last thing we think to ourselves is to restrain that person, or even if we think that, last thing we think from there on is to take that person's life. Why do you feel charges have yet to be brought against this young Marine?
It's important for your audience to realize and recognize that it's not coincidence, it's not happenstance, that Mr. Jordan Neely happens to be black. That is to say, when watching how he was murdered, it reminded me of the bad old days of slavery. That is to say, when black people were treated so shabbily and so atrociously. And we also should not see it as an irrelevant detail that the accused murderer has served time in the US military, has had two overseas deployments. When I read that, I was thinking perhaps he was deployed in Afghanistan or Iraq. Perhaps he learned that chokehold in Afghanistan or Iraq. Or perhaps he even used that chokehold against Afghanis or Iraqis. Also, we should see that Mr. Neely having this mental episode is a reflection of the fact that the United States has very poor social welfare measures, which is one of the reasons why it has one of the largest homeless populations in the world, in this apparent rich country. And likewise, a disproportionate percentage of those who are unhoused, who are homeless, happen to be black. It's also clear that the United States, as presently constituted, is incapable of dealing with the foregoing issues. I think it's incumbent upon our friends in the international community to raise this question at the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, at the General Assembly of the United Nations in New York City, because we should also recognize that, as I just referenced the fact that the accused was deployed overseas, there is a connection between this kind of brutality that the U.S. military exercises overseas and the kind of brutality that it exercises at home.
Thank you, Professor. And Colin, we can't help but to touch, I mean, and I hate to get into redundancy, but white privilege here. We've seen white people with mental health issues and police taking meticulous time trying to talk them down. And we see the exact opposite when an African-American suffers from a mental health issue. It's always draw for the, you know, weapon first and ask questions later. And there's just such a discrepancy there between the – I understand this guy's not a cop, but he is a veteran. He could have handled it completely different. Had the tables been turned around – what kind of public outrage do you think you would have seen if there's a black gentleman choked out a white guy on a subway to death because he had a mental meltdown?
Yeah, we probably would have seen subway passengers intervene and try to stop the black individual from trying to subdue the white individual. We have seen cases where many police officers who have killed unarmed black men have been acquitted on charges. But when a black man shoots a white person, a black police officer shoots a white person who they believe to be a threat, we've seen that person be sentenced to several years behind bars, several years in prison. So we've seen the reverse. I think that there is some interest in the grand jury hearing this case and seeing there should be charges filed. And I think that's what many people are looking forward to, as police are asking for people to send any type of video, any type of footage that they may have of what happened. Because again, this is a type of vigilantism. We have a veteran Marine who knows how to kill. So it's very hard to imagine that he didn't know what he was doing when he put this person in a chokehold. I'm sure there are other ways he had been trained to suppress or to withhold someone without putting a lethal move in place. And so therefore, it raises the question as to why this person was released, wasn't charged instantly. As we know that if it was, like you alluded to, if the role was reversed, this person would be at least held, charged, possibly released later, we don't know. But they probably would have been charged on the spot, knowing that this person died as a result of the actions of the person who was the aggressor in putting another person in a chokehold.
And Professor, is it safe to say at this point this gentleman may be charged, but that's really up to residents of New York to pour out in droves and show outrage over this? Like we said, had it been a black person doing this to a white person, chances are he would have already been charged. But he hasn't. We shouldn't negate the fact that there's still a good possibility this man may get charged, but it's really going to come after public outcry, isn't it?
Public outcry indeed. And this incident happened to take place in New York City, a city in which I used to reside, which has a very militant population, has the largest black population in the United States of America. They're accustomed to demonstrating. They're accustomed to putting pressure on the authorities. And I'm also afraid to say they're accustomed to these kinds of incidents. Hmm. And I dare say that the kind of street heat, to use the term that's often used in New York City, that's going to be deployed against the Manhattan District Attorney, speaking of Alvin Bragg, who happens to be black himself, by the way, will inevitably, I think, lead to charges against this accused Marine who should not be allowed to get away with murder.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe, both of you. That was Professor Gerald Horn there joining us, Professor of African American Studies there, joining us from the University of Houston, Houston, Texas, and Dr. Colin Campbell there joining us from Washington, D.C. Now a significant step toward the end of the COVID pandemic. The World Health Organization has declared illness is no longer representing a global health emergency.
Yesterday, the emergency committee met for the 15th time and recommended to me that I declare an end to the public health emergency of international concern. I have accepted that advice. It's therefore with great hope that I declare COVID-19 over as a global health emergency. In 3 years since then, COVID-19 has turned our world upside down. Almost 7 million deaths have been reported to WHO, but we know the toll is several times higher, at least 20 million.
The WHO Director General, however, warned that removing the highest level of alert does not mean the dangers posed by the virus is over. He said emergency status could be reinstated if the situation changes. The UN body first declared COVID represented its highest level of alert back in early 2020, January to be exact. Now, the first large-scale vaccination campaign began December of that same year. Process of vaccine development was followed by a grim period of hoarding and nationalism. And then as the pandemic was wreaking havoc around the world, people in many industrialized countries were receiving a second and third dose of vaccine, while only a small percentage of global population in the poorer countries had been vaccinated. Political commentator Rodney Shakespeare joined us earlier and gave us his thoughts on how COVID and the pandemic could have been man-made.
The Pentagon has admitted that they fund 46 biolaboratories in Ukraine. I believe there's another four in Nigeria, but just take the Ukraine ones. They say, oh, this is a hangover from the Cold War and that it's all peaceable. And of course, they're trying to say, oh, well, now the Pentagon hasn't admitted this, but the Pentagon has admitted this. Why is the Pentagon financing biolaboratories probably all the way around the world, not necessarily in America, but outside America? And there's a third factor in all of this. Since about 1970, the elite of this world, and I'm referring 1970, the Club of Rome, has wanted to cut down the population of the world. And there's no doubt that members of the World Economic Forum today also want to do that. But they have no means of doing it voluntarily. There are means of doing it and creating circumstances in which the population does reduce voluntarily. But they don't know what they are. And that is why people fear the vaccinations which are going on. And also it is why Dr. Boyle has said that when this virus ends, there will soon be another one and another one.
Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. Democrats claim to support reining in out-of-control defense spending and criticize Republicans for serving America's most powerful corporate interest while doing exactly that themselves. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Please stay with us. The website of Yahoo News writes, top Democratic lawmakers in the U.S. are holding a fundraising meeting with major arms companies on Thursday, April 27th, as Washington plunges into a budget battle in which concessions to the Pentagon and the defense industry could mean cuts to welfare programs such as food stamps. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York, his deputy Pete Aguilar, and Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, DCCC Chair, Representative Susan Delbin, have been selected as the honorees to be invited to the event. The downtown DC function, dubbed as Defense and National Security Dinner, is set to raise funds for the committee, which is the campaign arm for House Democrats and is central to their hopes of regaining the lower chamber of Congress. Dozens of representatives of Pentagon contractors, including Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, BAE Systems, SpaceX, Palantir, and General Dynamics, will attend the event. The group includes figures who previously worked for congressional Democrats, such as Shauna Candler, director of government relations at General Dynamics. Chandler spent 15 years as chief of staff for Representative Adam Smith, the Democratic chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, and another co-host of the Thursday's event. The event could provide a significant signal about the priorities of the House Democrats as they prepare for 2024 elections and battle Republicans who are demanding spending cuts in exchange for passing critical legislation. It could be a disappointing message to those who want the party to support social justice and progressive reform. A senior congressional aide said news of the fundraiser set off alarm bells among staffers, and the event could be a stark example of senior U.S. Democratic leaders saying one thing but doing another. Democrats claim to support reining in out-of-control defense spending and criticize Republicans for serving America's most powerful corporate interests while doing exactly that themselves. In the coming months, Democratic lawmakers are expected to make key decisions that will affect the U.S. defense industry as they fight Republican efforts to cut government spending. U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he wants comprehensive cuts, but signals from influential Republicans and analysis by budget experts suggest that McCarthy will protect the Pentagon budget. Democrats can also demand limits on Pentagon spending to protect other government agencies. However, the defense industry will lobby hard to prevent such a development. According to new data on global military spending published recently by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, the United States remains by far the world's biggest military spender. U.S. military spending reached $877 billion in 2022, which was 39% of total global military spending and three times more than the amount spent by China. The 0.7% real terms increase in U.S. spending in 2022 would have been even greater had it not been for the highest levels of inflation since 1981. Dr. Nan Tian, SIPRI senior researcher, said the increase in U.S.'s military spending in 2022 was largely accounted for by the unprecedented level of financial military aid it provided to Ukraine, adding, given the scale of U.S. spending, even a minor increase in percentage terms has a significant impact on the level of global military expenditure. Meanwhile, the Politico magazine reports, over the past 2 years, when Democrats fully controlled Congress, lawmakers twice pushed President Joe Biden to approve more military spending than he had requested. This year, Biden's Defense Department budget request is even higher than last year's final figure. Biden has overseen ballooning Pentagon funding while pledging to shift America's resources away from costly foreign wars. In an echo of his predecessor Trump, many progressives and some conservatives say the president and Congress should finally translate their rhetoric into change. On Thursday, April 27th, Representatives Barbara Lee and Andy Biggs introduced a bill to probe the Pentagon and launch automatic cuts at Defense Department offices that do not receive audits to ferret out suspected waste. U.S. financial military aid to Ukraine totaled $19.9 billion in 2022, although this was the largest amount of military aid given by any country to a single beneficiary in any year since the Cold War, it represented only 2.3% of total U.S. military spending. In 2022, the USA allocated $295 billion to military operations and maintenance, $264 billion to procurement and research and development, and $167 billion to military personnel. Military industrialists and gun manufacturers dominate the U.S. political scene, where any effort to hold them responsible for rampant gun violence is curbed. Moreover, the Huffington Post daily writes mass shootings are commonplace in the U.S. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been 146 so far in 2023, the most at this point in the year since 2016. The nonprofit group defines a mass shooting as four or more shots are killed, not including the shooter. According to data published recently by KFF, a nonprofit research organization formerly known as Kaiser Family Foundation, one in five American adults report having been personally threatened with a firearm. U.S. Democrats and gun safety activists have argued that passing stricter laws would reduce the violence, whereas Republicans and gun rights advocates argue that arming teachers would act as a deterrent. The United States, a country of around 330 million people, is awash with some 400 million guns. Efforts to ban assault rifles have faced opposition from Republicans who are staunch supporters of the constitutional right to bear arms. A Gallup poll from October 2022 showed the majority of Americans are in favor of gun control, with a 57% majority of all Americans saying they want stricter laws covering the sale of firearms. According to a nonprofit research group, more than 12,800 people in the U.S. have died from gun violence so far this year, which means an average of over 114 deaths per day. The latest report by Gun Violence Archive indicates 7,326 people have committed suicide using firearms, and 5,505 others have died in homicides, murders, accidental discharges, and defensive gun use. According to the tracker, as for minors, 79 children aged up to 11 and 456 aged 12 to 17 died in those incidents. The report also says there have been 168 mass shootings so far this year, and that the number of mass shootings have gone up significantly in recent years. In each of the last 3 years, there have been more than 600 mass shootings, almost two a day on average.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint, a critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the Movie Critique Program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my dear brothers, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, are helping me criticize the movie Transcendence, produced in 2014, directed by Wally Pfister, starring major actresses and actors such as Johnny Depp, Rebecca Hall, Paul Bettany, Morgan Freeman, Kate Mara, and the like. Salaamu Alaikum, Sayyid Abdullah. Welcome to the program again.
Wa Alaikum Assalam wa Rahmatullahi wa Barakatuh. And thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, Salaamu Alaikum. Welcome to the studio.
Alaikum Assalam wa Rahmatullahi wa Barakatuh. Again, always a pleasure to be with you, Brother.
No, thank you very much for both of you to join us, helping me contribute to the critique of the movie Transcendence. Let's take a listen to a short part of this movie directed by Wally Pfister, and then we'll be back criticizing it. Don't go away.
The path to building such a superintelligence requires us to unlock the most fundamental secrets of the universe. What is the nature of consciousness?
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. We are criticizing the movie Transcendence, directed by Wally Pfister, produced in 2014. At the end of the previous episode, we talked about, consciousness, but we left it off, sort of, and because of the shortage of time. Brother Yasser, let me start with you this time. What do you think is the nature of consciousness? And as you rightly mentioned in the earlier episode that we tried to criticize this movie, this question gets repeated several times throughout the movie. So what is consciousness? Sayyid Abdullah, to the best of my memory, I think he was taking consciousness for ruh, right? And he referred to that verse in the Holy Quran, that God says to the Holy Prophet that if they ask you about the ruh, tell them, well, you don't know.
It's one of my affairs.
Yeah, this is something that none of your business, basically. So what do you think is consciousness?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. To an extent, the verse in the Noble Quran is speaking about a reality that is a lot higher than the ruh we have.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, when we actually look at the Islamic world and the Islamic sciences, it was only within this 5th century to the 6th century Hijri where this question actually got answered. But what do we mean by consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
During the time of Ibn Sina, who spent and gave a beautiful explanation of what the ruh is, what the faculties of the ruh are, and so on and so on. But that is not to say that he understood it in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
He gave the understanding which is accepted.
Right.
But it does not mean that he knew, as the verse is saying, that yes, this is part of it, but this is not it. Again, there's a whole discussion of why that is and goes into the realm of Irfan, which we don't want to get into. But when it comes to consciousness, the simple thing that the proof that Ibn Sina would give us what is the concept of the hangman argument. Hangman argument is what? Hangman argument is Ibn Sina. And many philosophers, not only him, Western philosophers, and before him also mentioned, but he was one who kind of came with this argument, is that if I was in a room and I had all my material senses cut, would I still feel myself? The concept is, yes, you would. You still have a feeling of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
The I factor is there.
Yeah.
This concept
the self.
It's one of the things I cannot deny.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever I go, I cannot deny. A person who denies himself cannot deny himself. It becomes paradoxical. Who are you to deny something?
Mm-hmm.
Am I to deny? So you're denying yourself.
Yeah.
So this, it becomes paradoxical. It becomes self-contradictory.
Right.
It's a self-contradicting argument. So consciousness in its nature is just that I am aware. I am aware of my surroundings. I'm aware of the first thing, I'm aware of myself. I'm aware I am I. The concept of identity.
Right.
Which is one of the principles of philosophy. We have two, three principles that cannot be broken. It's the concept of identity, and I am I.
Mm-hmm.
I'm conscious of I am I. One of the other things also is when I look throughout my life at different pictures, I am still I. When I was a baby till I am now, I am still I. That I
is still there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not left me.
It's lingering.
It's always there.
Yeah.
I do not distinguish the eye, me being 37 years old now, from the eye that was 12 to the eye that will be 64, inshallah.
Mm-hmm. Inshallah.
There's no difference in it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference in that eye? There's no difference in it.
Right.
So that consciousness that...
Even though all of our souls...
It's gone.
Yeah.
I've completely changed.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Say every 7 years I change,
every
right?
Every 5 to 7.
They change. So
yeah.
My, according to their understanding, I should not be I,
mm-hmm.
which is why they've tried later on. To,
yes.
This philosophy of mind has come to kind of answer this question, which they failed to answer. That if I, material, even the cells of my brain change, right? The cell is something material, my brain cell change, the neurons change. That brain I had 10 years ago is not the same brain I have now. But why do I still have the same knowledge I had 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I still have the same memories I had 10 years ago? There must be something else that is there that is not...
More to the hippocampus.
Wherever it is.
They say hippocampus
but even that has changed. Even that has changed.
Location responsible for memory.
Exactly. But even that has changed. Its material
exactly.
form has changed.
Yeah.
So the knowledge is not there because we understand matter cannot have knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole reason why matter cannot have knowledge.
Right.
This is something that is proved. It's not something that is thingy.
Okay, thank you.
This concept of consciousness. But again, it's a long discussion. But
yeah, I know. There are lots of challenges to this, like the Cartesian dualism, for example.
Exactly. But even then, for example, that same, if you want to put it, I doubt, therefore I am,
yeah.
is supposed to be the other way around. I am, therefore I doubt.
I doubt
if there isn't an I, who's doubting?
Yeah, exactly.
So even
lots
then,
of other philosophers.
But even there's argument on what Descartes actually meant. But anyway.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie, Transcendence, produced in 2014, directed by Wally Pfister. Stay with us.
Dr. Castor?
Yes, sir. You have a question.
So, you want to create a god, your own god?
That's a very good question. Isn't that what man has always done?
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, and my two brothers, and the guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. We are criticizing the movie Transcendence. Well, produced in 2014, directed by Wally Pfister. Sayyid Abdullah, I asked Brother Yasser about consciousness. Also, there is another part of this movie that I need to, you know, draw your attention to. And that is, you know, rather at the beginning of the movie, when Dr. Castor, Johnny Depp, is giving, a lecture to the audience, and you see the... picture of Elon Musk in it too. You know, just one individual, one person in the audience just, you know, asks Johnny Depp a question. I guess it's a valid question, right? That he says, do you want to create a god, your own god? And Johnny Depp replies, isn't that what man has always done? I think he's referring to the very point of humanism, which tries to put human being at the center of the universe, irregardless of God, you know, whatever the heritage of mankind has always brought to our attention, which is the concept of God. Don't you think it's a valid question with regard to that?
A valid question in response to what? That man himself made himself God?
Sort of.
Okay, I mean, I don't know how to approach this without having to go on the
road. as you can see that now human beings have come up with lots of technological advancements, such as AI, even now in its infancy.
The idea was based on that question: is that would you create something that will precede you in creation? Because if you look at AI today, I had a look at some programs of AI myself.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I can simply say, beyond comprehension. The way they think, the way they operate, and how quick they give you an answer is mind-boggling.
Right.
So if I would have to compare an AI system that is available today, and mind you, what we have online currently that people can test out is just a fraction, like a tiny, tiny sample of what actually behind the curtain that me and you don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And with that small thing, it would give me an article of many pages in matters of seconds. And I was actually talking to one of them. There was one called OpenAI. You can try it out yourself for yourself. It's mind-boggling. And so would there come a time where such a machine, if it's empowered, becomes superior to human beings? So he's saying to him, well, yeah, you're creating another god.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're happy with human beings being gods. We don't want any other god.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, all this time, we are being the creators. We don't need more creators or someone to be in charge of us or someone enslaving us. Because obviously, the way that Hollywood looks at AI being the masters of Earth, and we're going to be the slave. We're going to be enslaved by our own tool. So this is basically what they're trying to get at, is that
mm-hmm.
we're empowering something and taking that power from ourselves, which is us being gods. Okay. So obviously it's a very atheistic ideology, to say the least.
Right.
But, you know, that's what's it's at stake.
Mm-hmm.
Who is to be God?
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a listen to a short part of the movie Transcendence, directed by Wally Pfister, produced in 2014, and then we'll be back.
Look, it's all built off of Casey's solution to the silver runner's problem. He did it 6 months ago.
He did what exactly?
Instead of creating an artificial intelligence, he duplicated an existing one.
Tell me you're joking.
He recorded the monkey's brain activity and uploaded its consciousness like a song or a movie.
You're out of your mind.
Will's body is dying, but his mind is a pattern of electrical signals that we can upload into pen. He can...
He's not a monkey.
Back to the program Viewpoint. We are criticizing the movie Transcendence with Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, you know... Again, in relation to the idea and the concept of consciousness, you know, in another part of this movie, Rebecca Hall, the doctor's wife, basically, Evelyn, wants to upload Johnny Depp's consciousness, Will's consciousness, into the supercomputer to save his mind, if not his body, right? Is that, do you think, possible, like, to first of all get online like this, like to transfer your consciousness with its entirety into a supercomputer like a quantum computer or whatever, you know? I'm reminded of this fact that man has always tried to escape death one way or another, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think so?
Definitely. That, as Sayyid rightly mentioned, is that if man sees himself as a god, then obviously God must be eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the natural kind of result of it. If I am a god, then I must be eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm not a god.
Right.
Right? There's one.
That would be mortal.
Yeah. I'll be mortal, then what? Then there must be a way that I can create this faculty or this kind of equipment or system by mm-hmm. which I can be eternal. I mean, it was a long period of time where people were looking at this cryogenic freezing. It kind of died down now and no one looks at it anymore because they've kind of found out that, okay, it wasn't really working out. So now this is a new thing that's come up. What's the other movie you mentioned? Chappie. That movie was African Robot.
Yeah.
You know, where the wife or they put the conscience of the intelligent person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, it's the thing of death. Whether it's possible or not is another issue altogether.
Yeah.
Because as we mentioned, is knowledge something that is material or not? If something immaterial, very unlikely, but if, for example, it gets changed into matter,
mm-hmm.
that can become number, because that's what information is, right? Zero and ones at the end of the day.
Yeah.
If that can be changed into matter and plugged into a system and then downloaded or uploaded, okay, it just becomes another supercomputer.
Mm-hmm.
But does it make it human? Does it, like, for example, you saw at the end of the movie, that lady herself, his own wife, got scared of it. She said, you are not you.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's also showing the danger mm-hmm. of what, if even that is possible, what could happen.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We try to criticized the movie Transcendence, produced in 2014, directed by Wally Pfister, but we haven't finished it yet. Inshallah, in the upcoming episode, we'll do that. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh my God,
it's like my mind has been set free. I'm gonna need to expand, I need more power. Get me online.
This is no will.
Shut it down.
Shut it down? It's him!
Where are you going?
Everywhere.
Your friends, they don't know the danger.
If she connects to the internet, the first thing it'll do is copy it up. And then there is no taking it down.
The real will die. Whatever it is, building an army out there.
What is this?
It's evolution.
This isn't evolution. It's an abomination.
What the hell's happening? I'm able to fix them.
This has gone too far, Will. Stop it!
I don't understand. This is the future.
This is not our future.
Evelyn!
You're not here with me.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Britain's economy has been facing record high inflation in recent months, with many workers going on strike and protest. The skyrocketing inflation rate, soaring above 10%, has led to a surge in food and energy prices in Britain. We take a look at the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Official figures have revealed Britain's economy failed to grow in February after being hit by the effects of strikes across the public sector and weakness in industrial output. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, said on Thursday, 13th of April, that the growth rate remained unchanged in February, falling below forecast in a Reuters poll. Expectations for a 0.1% rise in activity. Darren Morgan, Director of Economic Statistics at the Office for National Statistics, ONS, says strikes by civil servants and teachers held back growth in the economy in February. The comments came hours after Chancellor Jeremy Hunt claimed the United Kingdom would do significantly better than the International Monetary Fund forecast. On Tuesday, 11th of April, that the economy was expected to shrink by as much as 0.3% this year. The International Monetary Fund forecast that Britain's economy would shrink as the worst performance of any G7 economy, putting Britain at the bottom of the world's major economies in terms of expected economic growth in 2023. Despite February's poor performance, Jeremy Hunt claimed Britain's economic outlook was brighter than expected and that gross domestic product GDP, the measure of economic growth, had grown by 0.1% in the 3 months to February. Jeremy Hunt, who was brought in to revamp the British economy after a market rout under his predecessor, claimed, "We are set to avoid recession thanks to the steps we have taken through a massive package of cost of living support for families and radical reforms to boost the jobs market and business investment." Hunt added, the opposition Labour Party's shadow chancellor, Rachel Reeves, in a statement said the figures showed the economy was slowing down. Despite our enormous promise and potential as a country, Britain is lagging behind on the global stage with growth on the floor. The gross domestic product report shows the highest contributor to the negative growth in the services sector in the month of February was education, which fell 1.7% in the month. The Office of National Statistics said walkouts by teachers nationwide on 1st of February had been the biggest drag on economic growth. Strikes by many civil servants also affected output. Tens of thousands of teachers across Britain have been holding industrial action throughout this year in demand for a pay rise that matches the inflation rate. The greatest strike by teachers is set to be held on 27th of April and again on 2nd of May. Britain's economy has been grappling with record high inflation in recent months, with many workers going on strikes and protests as they can't match their wages with skyrocketing inflation. With inflation soaring above 10% and a surge in food and heating and energy costs, wages have fallen in real terms, with people struggling to pay their bills. Adding to the current pressure, the government has announced its new plan to end the Energy Price Guarantee Scheme, which will withdraw the government's financial support for energy bills. Inflation is at its highest rate for nearly 40 years because of rising energy prices and soaring food costs. In response, the Bank of England has been raising interest rates and last month increased them to 4.25 percentage points. Sky News has also covered this story and tells us more. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, said there is no room for complacency in tackling Britain's economic problems after official figures revealed no GDP or gross domestic product growth in February. But Jeremy Hunt claimed that while inflation was too high and economic growth was too low, he was confident that his budget plans unveiled last month would help turn things around. His comments came after the Office for National Statistics, ONS, reported that Britain's gross domestic product, or GDP, the total value of all goods and services produced in the country, flatlined at 0% in February. This was worse than the 0.1% growth predicted by economists in an opinion poll for Reuters news agency. The figures follow a rebound of 0.3% growth in January, and a confirmation Britain's economy avoided recession in the second half of 2022, which raised hopes for a better-than-expected financial outlook this year. Speaking to Sky News' economics and data editor Ed Conway at an International Monetary Fund summit in Washington, D.C., the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, said, "The growth numbers show there is absolutely no room for complacency. Inflation is higher than we want, and economic growth is lower than we want." Jeremy Hunt added, "That's why we've put in place a very clear plan in the budget to tackle the two biggest barriers to growth in the economy: businesses not being able to recruit the staff that they want, and investment by businesses not being as high as we want. So we've put in measures to deal with that," Jeremy Hunt claimed. "But when it comes to the longer-term prospects for the economy, what I'm hearing from my finance minister colleagues in Washington is confidence in the resilience of Britain's economy, a belief that we're on the right track." Earlier, the Labour Party's shadow chancellor, Rachel Reeves, described economic growth as being on the floor and hit out at Jeremy Hunt's approach. David Burrier from the British Chamber of Commerce also expressed concern at what he called stubbornly low economic growth. David Burrier added, "The government has not addressed some of the major issues holding firms back, such as the unprecedented energy price shock and record tightness in the labour market." Russia Today has also covered this story and tells us more. Barclays data showed that Britain's consumers slashed spending on luxuries and dining out in March as household incomes continue to suffer amid stubborn double-digit inflation. After analysing data on credit and debit card transactions, the bank announced more than half of Barclays cardholders cut spending on luxury items and one-off treats, while 6 in 10 trimmed expenses on eating out and purchase of new clothes. According to the lender, overall consumer spending grew 4% last month from a year earlier, with expenses in supermarkets climbing 7.8%, well below the rate of increase in prices for food and non-alcoholic drinks. Overall, inflation for food and non-alcoholic drinks surged to 18% in February, the highest level since 1977. The data indicates that British consumers are increasingly changing their shopping habits to save money amid the worsening cost of living crisis. Cash-strapped households are becoming more exposed as wage growth fails to keep pace with the biggest jump in prices in the last 40 years. Annual inflation unexpectedly rose to 10.4% in February, marking the sixth straight month in double digits and placing further pressure on British households. Also, retail data suggested British shoppers are switching from fresh to frozen food as they try to keep down spending amid the cost of living crisis. The soaring cost of weekly shopping has been a significant factor in the squeeze on Britain's households, with food price inflation running at 18.2% amid high energy prices and shortages of salad vegetables because of bad weather in Europe. In response, according to retail and survey data reported by the BBC, many shoppers are doing what they can to avoid having to pay higher prices. Shoppers have turned to frozen food in particular. According to research from Kantar, analysts covering retail in Great Britain, demand was strongest for items such as frozen chicken, for which volumes rose by 5.9% in the 12 weeks to 20th of March. Sales of frozen prepared foods, including ready meals, pizzas and chips, increased by 2.6%.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.